Hey everyone, welcome to another Resolutions podcast, where we like to take difficult topics and turn them into helpful conversations. I'm your host, Chris Campbell. In today's episode, we welcome back our friend Daniel McLaughlin of Loudon Canine. Daniel is a dog whisperer of sorts who specializes in obedience training with a very unique approach to behavior modification. Loudon Canine offers custom training programs that empower dog owners with the skills to take control of the relationship between owner and dog. This results in the very best bonding centered on understanding and respect. In today's episode, we talk to Daniel about service dogs and emotional support dogs. Now, in the United States, over 500,000 service dogs are helping people. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, that's the ADA, service dogs must be given access to almost everywhere their human handlers go. The U.S., over the past few years, has also seen an increase in emotional support animals, or ESAs, with the greatest number of ESAs being dogs. Now, to promote your dog to the status of an emotional support animal, or ESA, all you need is a therapist's letter asserting the animal contributes to your psychological well-being. If you don't have a therapist, there are for-profit websites known among some psychologists as ESA mills that will facilitate a quick and dubious disability appraisal by a clinician over the phone or via web survey. Then they will sell you miscellaneous swag for your dog like vests and tags, none of which are legally required, but tend to make your pet look more official. Air quotes here. While ESAs are technically not legally allowed to venture everywhere in public with their owners, only service animals have that right, they do come with certain perks. Equipped with a therapist's letter, you may move your pet into an animal-free apartment or dormitory. You may fly with your pet for free. And nothing stops an emotional support animal owner from asking for further accommodations wherever you may be. For this episode, we thought it would be interesting to ask Daniel to lend us his expertise in this subject matter. Our conversation covers the differences between service dogs and dogs who are considered emotional support animals. Daniel talks about ownership responsibility and the intuitive relationship that can be achieved with a service dog. Daniel also gives his insight into ESAs and the norms for obedience training. And then Daniel takes us into his personal story of healing and recovery. He shares his faith and describes how God has used one particular canine to help him overcome the overwhelming symptoms of PTSD and allow him to reintegrate back into community and meaningful relationships. You will be blessed by Daniel's expertise, transparency, and his narrative. At the end of our time with Daniel, Michael Gum, the co-host of Resolutions Podcast, will wrap up with some important remarks and tell you how to get in touch with Loudon Canine. Here is our interview with Daniel McLaughlin. Daniel, tell us a little bit about Loudon Canine and what you do and how you do it.
Yeah, we're a business in Loudon County, Virginia. We offer in-home training services where we go to people's homes, work with their dogs in their home with them. And then we offer a board and train program. We have a small kennel here on property where I live that we board and train dogs for a 3-week period of time. And then since the COVID transition craziness, we have started a virtual training program as well. And that's opened us up to be able to help people all across the nation and honestly the world.
Yeah. And, you know, to our listeners, if you didn't catch the first episode in season 2 with Daniel, I'd encourage you to back up, go listen to that, because we talked about, you know, the essence of what you do when it comes to training dogs that make them great family companions. you know, how to integrate them in to a family setting, to a home setting, in a way that is very complementary versus disruptive. And the idea is, if you can integrate, you know, a dog into your household in a way that makes sense to him and is healthy for him, it benefits the family, and that in and of itself is an emotionally good thing, right? and so you know, I thought it would be really good to go a little deeper with that and to talk about you know, what is it that makes a dog such a strong candidate to be you know, a good service canine or an emotional support canine. And let me tell you what is sort of the catalyst behind this, and maybe we'll laugh about it a little bit, but anyway, it is what makes it relevant. Before 2020 and the onset of COVID-19 and everybody sort of pulling back to whatever extent social distancing was, sometimes it's locked down. You know, a lot of, we saw campuses, workplaces shut down, everything go virtual. The number one request as a professional therapist that I would get from 18 to 26 year olds was, you want to guess?
Emotional support or service.
They wanted me to in order for them to get clearance to bring their favorite dog into an apartment they were renting, or to bring them on campus or into a classroom or whatever, they needed some sort of mental health professional to sign off on that and validate that. And would you care to guess what the parameters and sort of the governance of me as a licensed professional counselor is concerning, you know, signing off, giving credit, or you know, legitimizing a dog as being a you know, an absolute emotional support animal is?
Zero.
Zero.
There's not a governing entity over service dogs versus emotional support dogs. It has caused all kinds of conflict, especially in my world, with people who want to do the emotional support to be able to get access, to be able to do things and take their dog places. And, you know, that is great. As you know, I have a service dog. And that dog has opened up a world for me I couldn't have found on my own. Mm-hmm. But there are people who want to, you know, go outside of what's really necessary to get kind of the things that they want. And it's often hurting things for other people who need them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hear that. You know, let's start there then. Talk about your service dog. Talk about that, the role a service dog plays. You know, give us sort of an overarching view of that, but then personalize it. Tell us, you know, where does that make sense? How does that make sense? You know, where is it a good fit?
Yeah, a service dog specifically is trained to do tasks that help an owner live in normalcy. So, you know, that can be anything from physical disabilities to mental health disabilities. But a service dog is a task-oriented dog. They're trained specifically for tasks. And that makes the biggest difference. An emotional support dog is just that. It's a dog that helps somebody feel better. They're often attached to people who struggle with generalized anxiety or depression, things like that. But they're not task oriented.
If it's not too personal, talk about you know, how your service canine helps you.
Sure. So I have Raina. She is, we'll get into this, I think, in a minute, but she's a bit of an odd breed for this type of work. She's a Dutch Shepherd. She was gifted to me by a breeder in Tennessee. I was able to train her to wake me up from night terrors. Mm-hmm. I struggle with PTSD. And she is able to alert to severe panic attacks for me as well. So if we're in public, she can do that. And she can wake me from night terrors.
How does she do that?
She will hop up on my chest and lick my face. And she can sense when my body, the chemical changes, and when I start to stir, she will hop up on my bed and wake me up.
Astounding. That is so phenomenal. So what about when you're fully awake and you're out in public and she's with you, how does she sense that there and what does she do?
Same thing. She can tell that my behavior starts to change a little bit. When I start getting anxious, I get little tics, and she can pick up on those tics a little bit. And she will, if I'm sitting down, she'll hop up on my, and put her paws up on my lap and lick at my face and paw at me.
Yeah.
She will also help lead me out of a room if I need to get out of somewhere. If I'm standing, she will nudge and bump me.
And so as she cues you, I know that she's interrupting, obviously, your nervous system that's starting to go on to high alert. But when she cues you, what's your response to that? What do you do?
What that does for me, and I can't say what that will do for anybody else, but for me, what it does is it pulls me out of what I call being stuck in my head, or where I start to get some tunnel vision. When I have a panic attack, the room gets small for me. And I have, if I'm looking down through a room, I struggle where the outsides of the room are blurry. The inside of the room is clear. That seems like a really weird thing, but that's the best way that I can describe
the beginning
of a panic attack. So for me, what that does is it pulls me back into reality and out of my head and immediately I have to do something for her because she's coming to me, alerting me. So my immediate response is to lean down and pet or to talk to her or something. And that in a lot of ways will pull me out of what is going to be a very fast, slippery slope.
Wow, man. Yeah. And as you're describing that, and that's a really, really great job of breaking that down. What it is you've got a living, breathing intervention, that's there with you at any point that has been trained to step in for that specific task, right? I mean, am I understanding that correctly?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. And what a benefit that is. So let's stay on service animals. Let's stay on service canines here for a second. I think you touched on this briefly, but give us some examples of, who might be a good candidate for a service canine.
Most people with a disability are a good candidate for it. If you're, depending on if you're able to care for the dog, right?
Yeah.
So somebody with some disability that can still care for an animal obviously is a big piece, or having somebody who lives with you 24/7 who can help care for that animal. That's the big differentiating thing, right? Can you take care of it still? So they can be trained to pull wheelchairs. They can be trained to open doors, open cabinets, alert for times for medication. They can retrieve medication. They can alert to, as we talked about, panic attacks, anxiety attacks, seizures. All kinds of amazing, amazing tasks these dogs can do.
So what is involved? Let's break this down a little further as far as what's different about the training as it, concerns a service dog, a service canine, rather than just, the regular type of obedience training that a dog might normally receive. And then we'll talk about are there any certain specifics about care, how do you care for a service dog that's a little different than maybe the normal family pet? So go ahead.
Sure. So that is awfully dependent on the type of disability that you're training the dog to work with it. A dog that's helping somebody who's blind is going to receive different type of training, specialized training, than a dog that is working with somebody who has seizures. So I'm not the all-knowing trainer on each of those different things. Mine is more on the mental health side of things than it is the physical abilities for people. But there is specialized training for each category of thing that you need a dog to do for you. But first and foremost, you've got to start with solid environmental training, solid obedience training. That dog has to be environmentally sound in order for it to be able to do what it needs to do in public and not cause other issues.
You're talking about something obviously that is very task specific, very task. And you said that at first, but I mean, I just really want to underscore that again. It has to do obviously with being task specific. Is there ongoing special care, special things that a person with a service animal has to keep in mind, has to reinforce, or special needs of a dog that is so task centric?
As far as care, when I think of the word care, nothing more than your normal, well cared for pet dog. Shots, yearly checkups, all of those things, health, good food, good grooming. Grooming is one you want to keep up with really, really well. If you're taking a dog out in public, you want that dog clean, extremely clean. As far as, the other side of care that I think of is continued training. Mm-hmm. When you have a service dog, you don't just send it to training or train it for a period of time, but training almost becomes a lifestyle for the dog and for you. So for me, I am constantly working with Raina to make sure that she stays top notch on what she needs to do with me. Mm-hmm. And again, for me, holding her accountable to what I've trained her to do and keeping up with that. It's very, very important.
Daniel, talk to us about the bonding and attachment that happens with a task-specific service canine that is really connected, like heart and soul, intuitively with the assigned master, the assigned owner. What's that like that's different?
That's a tough question to answer. because I have only experienced this one time with my own dog. Mm-hmm. I have not had another service dog before Raina. And for me, I'm going to have a very different take on what that looked like or why or how it worked for me and her, because this was not, I did not get her originally for service work. I had intended to do sport work with her and do sport. I wanted to get involved more heavily in sport training.
Okay.
And so I got her as a prospect for that.
Okay.
Being a dog trainer, kind of being where I was in life, I realized very quickly she would do the sport dog stuff if I wanted her to. But I didn't feel like it was really coming from her heart and soul. She was doing it out of an activity with me, and being with me and doing what I was asking her to do. But something inside of me just felt like she's not 100% into this. And I didn't feel right continuing to push that with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
All while, because at the end of the day, we want to respect the dog. Okay. That's a massive piece of what I do on a daily basis. Yeah. Let's respect the dog.
Wow. Yeah.
And so some may say, well, you need to push harder or train harder or do this or do that. And for where I was in life and what I could see, she was kind of starting to bond to me, and she was already getting keenly aware of even mood swings for me. Mm. So I think there was another purpose for her being in my life, right? Mm-hmm. That I was not set up for or was even mentally prepared for or thinking was going to happen. She happened to wake me up in the middle of the night one night. And she was sleeping on the floor in my room, and she, I woke up, with her on top of me. And I was in a pool of sweat it was unbelievable. And I had actually ripped my bed sheet, from tossing and kicking.
Yeah.
That kicked off the start of, oh my gosh, this dog, like, she saw or could tell that I was in distress. That was extreme, because I'd gone pretty far into the panic attack or the night terror from that. Right.
Yeah.
So obviously she was interested in like what was going on. Right. So when she woke me up, I immediately kind of just grabbed her and pet her and was, you know, trying to get back to some sense of reality there, right? Mm-hmm. Being a dog trainer, I know that when you want a dog to increase the likelihood of repeating a behavior you want, you have to reward it.
Yeah.
That's dog training 101, right? Mm-hmm. If you want the dog to sit more, feed it a treat, right?
right.
So what I started doing, and you know, I don't know if this is general practice or not, but what I started doing was hiding a ball or a tug underneath of my mattress.
Okay.
At that point in my life, I was having very regular night terrors.
Okay.
And she continued to wake me up from them, and I would immediately play with her.
Okay.
She was smart enough. You know, some people would say, well, maybe you started to encourage her to wake you up just to play. For whatever reason, she was smart enough to figure out, I'm only going to do this when he's having an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she began to alert me sooner and sooner and sooner inside of that cycle.
Wow.
Where, you know, I would wake up and my heart was racing, but I hadn't started the night sweats yet.
Wow.
Where I hadn't started kicking yet.
Wow.
For me, that bonding process came through daily play, daily interaction, daily training with her. But it was, you know, some would say that it was almost accidental. I don't think it was accidental. I think God knew what I needed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I 100% think he provided it for me.
Yeah.
And in the midst of that, gave me a level of love and appreciation for an animal that, you know, that I'm not sure I understood or felt before.
Yeah.
But also, Chris, it gave me a love and an understanding and an appreciation for what people struggle with.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point. Yeah. And I appreciate you being vulnerable with us. I think listeners are going to be able to relate exactly, you know, to what you just said. And, you know, maybe a good point of conversation, you know, for a person who's listening to this and they're saying, okay, well, maybe I'm a good candidate to, you know, to explore the idea of having a service canine. Maybe it begins with consulting, you know, a mental health counselor, a psychiatrist, a psychologist. I know that, I think that was something that you discussed as well, right? With a professional.
I did. So once she kind of started, I figured out she was starting to do these things. I was meeting with a psychiatrist already previously, and he knew that I was able to train dogs, that I was doing some of that for a living and things like that. And I went to him, we were talking, and therapy had gotten me pretty far, and medication had gotten me pretty far for a period of time. And we just felt like we weren't all the way there. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And so because of my unique situation and my abilities, I think he was more willing to let me go this route and give this a shot to see if this dog can get me back to where I need to be. Mm. I still see a therapist pretty regularly, but I've been off mental health medication for a long, long time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let's allow you to shift here and do a bit of contrasting. So now that we've really dialed in on what is a service canine, what does that look like? There, of course, they're very task specific oriented. Let's talk about emotional support dogs specifically. I know there are emotional support animals. We're going to stay in this particular, species. We're going to stay in this lane with emotional support canines. So what's the difference here then? So what makes an emotional support canine different than a service canine?
It is task. That word keeps coming back up, but it is task. And an emotional support dog is not trained for a specific task. I would say that the emotional support dogs that I've worked with and helped people with are people that probably have some type of trauma or struggle with depression, generalized depression, and even some generalized anxiety. Mm-hmm. Right. And, mm-hmm. and a dog being near them, being with them, brings a level of comfort. A dog has a way of emotionally connecting with you with no words attached.
Yeah.
And when you see it happen or feel it happen, watch it happen, it's something that's almost like, how do you explain how that dog can do that?
Yeah.
How can I do that? And so there's a, I think there's a comfort and a security in the oddness of that, right? Of this dog can feel and understand something is off here and it needs attention. Mm-hmm. What an amazing thing. And so I think that's where, you know, that's what an emotional support dog is basically. It helps people feel comfort and feel a safety that I think other people and other things can't provide.
Yeah. That's a good breakdown. Let's say that a person is in a space to where they're going, okay, I'm wondering if I would be, a good candidate for an emotional support canine, or maybe I have, you know, a dog that with a little more specific training and me, a little more understanding on my part, you know, this team together could really be an assistant right now to get me through this, these deep weeds that I'm sort of walking through here mentally or emotionally. So what breeds would you say are maybe the better selection for that type of a role? And I'm not, maybe you're going to say, hey, it's not a specific breed, but here are the types of, dogs that we're looking at that tend to be really good in this support role.
For emotional support, genetics and temperament is what I would say goes above a breed. Now, as we talked about before, breeds have tendencies, right? We mm-hmm. talked about that in the first podcast. And as far as like what's a good dog for your home, right? Mm-hmm. Breeds have tendencies. So you want to look at that. But every dog within a litter inside of a specific breed is going to have a different temperament, different personality. So first and foremost, you need to find the right type of temperament. And that's going to depend on what your needs are and also what your lifestyle is, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking for an emotional support animal, that dog needs to fit your lifestyle as well. Mm. A cute little fluffy dog from a backyard breeder somewhere may or may not fit the bill for what you need. So I would be looking at temperament and genetics over top of a breed first, and then consider some breeds as well.
Are there any ones that stand out to you if a person is just exploring the idea?
Yeah, the common ones: Golden Retriever, the Labrador Retriever, dogs like that. You have a better chance, right, at getting the right temperament and the right genetics with something like that, you know, over a Malinois. The fact that I have a Dutch Shepherd, which is kind of funny because they're super similar to a Malinois and they're not really known for service work.
Yeah.
They are task-oriented dogs. They're highly driven and super, super smart.
Yeah.
Which can help you shape behavior and help you shape tasks. You know, you can teach a dog like this a task super fast. They're not always the right temperament for service work or emotional support work.
Yeah.
So this is a unique situation.
Yeah. Well, and our listeners can Google that, but you're talking about a breed that is specifically used with special operations groups.
Yeah. Military. Police, military use them a lot. Yeah. And sport dog trainers.
Yeah.
Which was what my original intent was with her.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, you know, here's what I've learned, you know, from you and just, you know, some of the research that I've had to do personally as, you know, people were coming to me wanting some sort of a personal endorsement or a professional endorsement for an emotional support animal. And I get this. And you and I have talked about this before. I'm a dog person. I've had dogs, and I know that dogs have this special ability that you've already touched on. They teach us mindfulness,
it's a great word.
Yeah. They teach us mindfulness. I mean, like my, you know, my favorite pet that I've had was a boxer. You've met him before, Newman. He's since passed. But, when that dog's ability to find a bit of sunlight coming through the window and just lie down in that sunlight and just experience that moment spoke to me. You know, it's like just that type of mindfulness, you know, or, you know, just the ability of a dog to sense stress and to provide comic relief, or to, you know, my wife and I, like most couples, like we can have tense moments. Yeah. And that dog would sense it, and he would come and somehow position himself between the two of us, you know, as a buffer, or yeah, want to be petted. You know, it was like we thought he was being needy until we recognized, no, he's being a peacemaker. You know, yeah, there's some soothing that he's offering here. Yeah. And you talked about empathy. You talk about dogs bringing comfort. I will say that, you know, for elderly people who have lost their companion, and you've got a widow or a widower, dogs can provide a new sense of purpose too, you know, because you've got a companion now that needs care, and it gives you some extra focus. It can provide some socialization, you know, as you're taking that dog out on walks and to dog parks and things like that. So, you know, those are, I'm not an expert, but those are the things that I've caught, you know, that I've learned from you. And
another term that I would like to throw out as well is self-awareness. Mm. Dogs are very, very aware. They're very, yeah, present.
Yeah.
They are in the here and now. And man, what a lesson for us to learn, right? Yeah. Mindfulness is another piece of that. Self-awareness. Raina has helped me with self-awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, here is a loaded question, and I'm giving you the opportunity for unabashed self-promotion. Here's my question. Can a well-trained dog meet most needs and criteria for an emotional support animal?
My simple answer is yes.
That's a good answer. What makes you say yes?
Because I think the dog, at the core of being a dog, has all the things to help somebody feel emotionally secure and emotionally safe. Mm-hmm. They do. Mm-hmm. What makes or breaks that is a person's ability to respect the dog for what it is. Mm-hmm. And what makes or breaks that is how well adapted to life and how well trained the dog is. Mm. An unruly dog is, yeah, going to cause more stress,
yeah, yeah,
right, than it is emotional care.
Yes.
And I have 2,000 dogs under my belt to prove it.
Yes.
here's the other thing. I see people take a lot of hurt, trauma, and all just the nastiness of life that we all encounter to some level, and can easily project that onto a dog.
Mm. Yes. And guilty right here. That was, yeah, part of my journey as a pet owner. Keep talking then.
Yeah. And man, this one hits me hard for what we do with dogs and what we do with people. Mm. Dog training is relationship based. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we can so very easily project and dump all of life's woes onto an animal and wreck it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And that's strong terminology. I know that. And it's probably rubbing some people wrong. But if you sit back and can think about that and self-reflect a bit, you, mm-hmm, probably find some truth in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So when I talk about respecting the dog, that's where that is coming from. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Is our ability to easily water down an animal and water down a relationship and really project things onto a dog that can quietly implode it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where behavior problems stem from.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with emotionally loving an animal. And I think that's why they're here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge piece of it. Mm-hmm. The emotional attachment is huge, but I think your emotional attachment can get in the way of respecting the dog for being a dog.
Mm, so good.
and you have to walk that line really carefully.
Yeah. So good. So good. And I think, you know, going back, that's where a trainer like you and the services that you provide through Loudoun Canine, you know, I think that helps, you know, an owner understand that. Yep. And I respect that so much. You know, Daniel, maybe a great way here, if it's okay with you, to wrap up our discussion for today is, you know, you're a person of faith. You've shared that before on an earlier podcast. Your relationship with God as a Christ follower means so much. And, you know, I think I would love for our listeners to, again, get to know you a little more and why your expertise comes from such a deep place of conviction. And I wonder, you know, how would you feel about, you know, talking through, you know, just specifically as a young adult? I know there were some things that you went through that were just tremendously challenging on a personal level, and how, you know, your relationship with dogs became so critical, so crucial for you. Well, how about that? Would you care to share with us?
Happy to.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to answer that question, I'm going to have to back up a little bit here. When I was born, I was born with hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, and spina bifida. Mm-hmm. And so immediately from birth, I went into surgery. Mm-hmm. The effects of anesthesia on an infant still are not really totally known. Mm-hmm. We do know a lot about attachment theory mm-hmm. now that we didn't know before, mm-hmm. and how being pulled from my mom that early for surgeries and her not being able to be physically present with me for a couple of surgeries. There was one right when I was born and one at 9 days old. Mm. There's definitely some pieces there that we just don't know all the ins and outs of how that affects an infant, right? So that's kind of how I came into this world. The amazing piece to this is that, you know, there's a large percentage of people who are born with these disabilities that don't survive and don't walk. And I'm 40 years old, cruising on my own two legs. So right out of the gate, I want people to hear, you know, God has been good.
Yeah, right.
You know, and he's blessed me with an incredible life. But that jump start, you know, into life, it's uncertain kind of what the ramifications of that are, right? Mm-hmm. In another sense. So I've struggled with chronic pain and a lot of things throughout my life based on those birth defects. When I was just entering into high school, I had always wanted to play football. I was at a private school all the way up through the eighth grade and wanted to play football. And my mom said, I'm going to take you to the doctor. And if the doctor clears you to play, you can play. Mm-hmm. Knowing probably full well the doctor was going to say, no, dude, you're crazy, which he did. He said, no, you're crazy. They did a scan on my back, and they found where that, it's called a meningocele, a sac of fluid was on my back where I was born. When they removed that, it left a segment of my spine detached. Mm. And they found that at that time. Didn't realize it. So I'd gone from infancy all the way to roughly 14 or 15 years old with my spine detached at the base of my back. So a doctor said, no way, man, no football. Which, you know, as a kid angered me, right? You know, right. I wanted to play that for a long time. And right. I got pretty bitter. I got pretty bitter with God over that. Over the years, healed from it, but started to, you know, started that journey at 15, pretty angry in high school. I also had some other abuse and trauma as a kid as well. And all of this is leading up to why I do what I do and why I'm so dang passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. There's always a reason for things that happen. I 100% believe that. And So the doctor said, you know, at some point you're going to have a spinal fusion. Fast forward a few years in my early 20s, a few months after I had gotten married, I was working at a Corian countertop shop. Corian was a, you know, used to be the thing when it came to kitchens, right?
Yeah.
Extremely heavy stuff.
Okay.
I was working, slinging Corian countertops in a shop all day. And I came home from work and collapsed on the sofa in tears from pain, physical pain. Went in to see the neurologist and he said, it's time to have your spinal fusion. Mm. So roughly, we'll call it 90 days into marriage. Mm-hmm. I lost my job, lost my insurance benefits, and went into major spine surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
During that surgery, some massive trauma occurred to me, and I woke up. Mm-hmm.
Take your time, man.
I think I'll probably just leave that one there.
Okay.
That's a major thing that occurred. When they finally woke me up from the actual anesthesia, I ripped the IVs out of my arm and got out of bed and walked across the room trying to escape. It took several grown adults to wrestle me back into bed. From that time, I developed a really short fuse. Mm. Life kind of became a bit confusing for me. My marriage relationship was in massive struggle. I was not the person that I was before that event. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It also kind of brought back up old trauma, kind of pulled that back into my reality. I struggled with addiction for a long time, not understanding where the explosiveness was coming from. The best way that I can even try to explain that it was hard to reason. It was hard to think clear. Life became really, really difficult for me. And I made a lot of poor choices in that time. I didn't know what PTSD was. Mm-hmm. And I went back to a therapist. They took me through EMDR therapy, which is a very intensive level of therapy that kind of takes you back into memories. Fortunately for me, the therapist that I worked with who took me through that was a Christian therapist and helped me connect truth of who God is and truth about who I am and who God created me to be. He attached those pieces to the EMDR process. PTSD is a really difficult thing to even try to help somebody understand.
Yeah.
You know, and there's different levels of it. For some people, it's severely debilitating. For others, it's mood altering at times. You know, you have, you're triggered. You know, everybody kind of gets a kick out of that word, but you're triggered at things super, super easily that you never were before. And it's confusing to the person who has it. At least for me, it was confusing because stuff would bother me that never bothered me before. And what, you know, where's that coming from? So, you know, in the midst of that, I struggled with addiction. I struggled with severe anger and, was not a person I'm proud of. Mm. The addiction, and the anger, was a major contributing factor to me losing my marriage. I had two kids. Mm-hmm. Found myself at, you know, 32, 33 years old, starting from scratch again. As I mentioned earlier, you know, been a psychiatrist on medication, things like that. Was starting to get pretty far with some of that. Had just started Loudon Canine. So I, all within about a 14 or 15 month period of time, if my memory serves me correctly, the company I was working for sold. So I lost my job. I lost my marriage, and then found myself, as I was starting this new business, struggling with short-term memory loss. I was having a hard time. I was having some headaches. Went to the doctor, and they found my third ventricle in my brain was clogged. And fluid in my brain was not draining the way that it needed to. And so it would kind of back up, get clogged. I would have a headache, struggle with memory loss, and then it would drain. All while I was experiencing that, this beautiful dog, Raina, was given to me. As I mentioned earlier, I got her with the goal of doing some sport dog training with her. Quickly realized that I needed to respect the dog that she was, and also where I was at in life and what I had, you know, going on. And we switched gears, and I'm grateful. So I was able to help train her to wake me up from night terrors and to help me with panic attacks.
Yeah.
And she was able to get me back out into the world.
Yeah.
I was able to have her in ICU recovering from my brain surgery. And it's the first and only surgery I've had. I think I've had somewhere between 10 and 12 surgeries. Yeah. So the first and only surgery in the last 20 years that I have woken up from non-combative.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think that that's a coincidence. No. It's not. So from my relationship with her, that I was already into dog training, obviously, and worked for another business doing dog training. But that relationship with her sparked a whole new level of passion for people and helping people with their dogs. So over the years, we've developed our programs as a dog training business for Loud Canine. And a massive component of that is relationship. I wouldn't be where I am without her. And I want to respect the dog for what they are and love them for what they are and help people see how to live their best life with their dog. I was not a person I was proud to be for a long time. And I hurt a lot of people. And a dog is just is one way that I've kind of found my way back.
Daniel, thank you so much. I so appreciate your willingness to go there, because I feel like, you know, what you just shared and the story that you're talking about on a personal level is not just going to touch, you know, our listeners, but I think there are listeners right now who are, they're finding a bit of hope that they did not know was there. And yes, it involves the subject matter, you know, that we're talking about here today. And of course, those are emotional support and service dogs. But really, you know, you're giving testimony to just providential ways that God really covers us with grace. There's a restoration that is available for us, you know, as human beings. I love Psalm 103 is a passage that I've committed to memory. And it really comes to mind as I'm listening to you share. And in the middle of that, David, who had his own struggles and tried to, and really had to wrestle with regret, if you know his story, you know, he declares that as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is God's mercy for those who revere and respect, who fear him. He says, as far as the east is from the west, he's removed our transgressions from us. And it says, as a father pities his child, and that word pity is not pathetic. It is an ancient word that means a special understanding of consideration and love. As a father pities his child, so the Lord pities those who are his and who revere him. And that really comes to mind, you know, as you're sharing your testimony. You know, the other powerful thing about this is I think back to this tremendous bond that seemed to have been there from the beginning between humanity and the animal kingdom. You know, if our listeners are familiar with the scripture at all, and the story of Adam and Eve and that wonderful Garden of Eden that they were in, Eve has this conversation with a particular animal in, you know, the serpent, and it doesn't freak her out at all. And so there seems, you know, the inclination that I have is, you know, in God's perfect paradise, there was a capacity to communicate in a very real way between humanity and the animal kingdom. And one of the promises that we find in the scripture, as far as God redeeming all of creation, it's in Isaiah chapter 11, is where even the animal kingdom will come back into its right alignment and be at peace with each other. We will see the end of the predatory instinct in animals, and they'll not only be at peace with each other, but again, there'll be this special connection, you know, between human beings and the animal kingdom. And I think that we get little glimpses of heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we understand what it's like to work through, what amounts to, you know, personal brushes of hell here in an imperfect world, I think that God is faithful to give us these little glimpses of heaven and that which is to come. And I think you really illustrated that in a powerful way. So thank you so much. We're going to have links again to your services, to Loudon Canine. We're also going to have other links that will direct people who want to consider more the possibility of a service dog or an emotional support dog. And we're gonna make sure that if this episode has touched a person's heart, that we're going to give them just the right contact information to, you know, to chase those ideas, to chase those potentials a little further.
I would like to add too that the vision of our business, yes, is to help pet owners with their relationship with their dog. First and foremost, that's what we do. The entire goal of where we are headed in the long run is to start a nonprofit organization that breeds and trains service dogs for people at no cost.
Powerful.
So that is the long-term vision of this business. And
my friend, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And again, you know, we'll please keep us posted on that as that progresses. We'd love to have you come back on here and talk about that aspect of what you provide, the services you provide. And I'll tease this out a little bit. You know, we want to have you back on here again because I would love to talk to you more about the respectful geriatric care of dogs as they age, and then even, you know, grieving the loss of a pet. I think that you could really speak to those issues as well. So with that, we'll push pause for now. Our guest today has been Daniel McLaughlin of Loudon Canine. And Daniel, thank you so much. Your insight is going to prove to be just so precious and valuable to the listeners, but also your willingness to just share on a personal level your faith, your journey, and how God has used, dogs, canines, to really to allow you to step into a greater place of freedom in your life has just been nothing short of inspirational. So thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Chris. And it is always an encouragement. Every interaction I have with you is always encouraging. So I look forward to it every time.
Hey, friends. This is Michael Gumm, co-host of the Resolutions Podcast. We hope you've been encouraged by today's episode. We would love for you to subscribe to our podcast on the platform of your choice, leave us a favorable review, and, of course, tell your friends. The Resolutions Podcast exists to bring the best of integrated therapeutic discussions to the widest audience possible, free of charge. To find more information about Loudon Canine or service animals, please be sure to check out the show notes on our website, resolutionsofwv.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in again next episode.